Well, hello, welcome to episode 2 of To Boldly Go. My name is Dylan.
And my name is Nick.
And this is a podcast about one of us trying something new every single time.
And for example, last time we don't have the experience of going to an adult concert for the first time, and that was pretty cool. How was that, Dylan?
Oh, it was so incredible, but I don't want to give you guys spoilers. Just go and listen to episode 1.
Absolutely. Go and do that now. Thank you to our 4 listeners from last time.
Hey, we had 5.
We had 4.5 because Caleb Penner only listened to half. So shout out to Caleb.
Thanks for the support, Caleb.
We love you.
Anyways, we got all kinds of great experiences planned for you guys throughout the season. For example, Nick, what's something you're going to make me do?
I'm going to make you do these really nerdy tabletop games, make a character in D&D, and just talk about it.
Well, as long as I don't have to paint anything for Warhammer.
You absolutely do.
Okay, well, we'll see how that goes. One thing that Nick's going to be doing later is he's going to join a policy group for a political party.
Which I'm really excited because, just like you, listener, I have no idea what that is.
So we're excited for some of the experiences that we get to share with you. But let's dive right in. Nick, you had a recent first-time experience. What was that?
So a couple of days ago, a friend of mine invited me to go see a movie. And the movie that he wanted to see, I wasn't super excited about seeing. So then I suggested that we go see another movie. And that movie was called Arrival, and I won't explain to you what that is. But I had no idea what this movie entailed, what genre it was even. The only thing I knew was it had a pretty good rating on IMDb. So I didn't see the trailer or anything. So I go and see this movie, and it was incredible. But what was incredible was going into a movie, not knowing anything about it. A couple of days later, my wife and I went and saw another movie, and I hadn't even seen the trailer for that. I knew it was a Harry Potter movie that was Fantastic Beasts. Also really incredible, and I realized that this was something that you had done that you do on a regular basis, but not seeing movies, not seeing the trailers for a movie completely changed my whole experience.
Totally. If you haven't done it before, it's easy to say, that's not an experience. I see movies all the time. But in this day and age, you see so many trailers that half the time you can tell every single plot point, all the funny jokes, and all the reveals are spoiled before you even get there.
For example, I also saw Hacksaw Ridge, and so this is a period of time where this works out, because I've seen 3 movies in the last 3 weeks, and one of which I saw the trailer, and it was Hacksaw Ridge, and there's a scene in the trailer that only happens the last five minutes of the movie, and really, once you see the trailer, you've seen the entire movie, and your brain almost expects these scenes to come, and you really spoil your whole experience when you've seen trailers. I mean, there's some directors, like J.J. Abrams does a really good job of not showing anything in his trailers, but a lot of people, they want to get you to the movie, so they show all the exciting scenes, all the climaxes, all the conflicts. So what's the point of even going?
Yeah, and I think it's just an experience because it's one of those things where you walk in and you don't know what you're getting into. I think the magic of movies is they transport you to another world filled with surprises, filled with wonder, filled with all kinds of things that you don't even know where you're going. And there's something about really knowing what to expect that stops your brain from taking there.
So, Dylan, have you done this before? Clearly, you've done this before. Can you give me an example of your favorite time doing this?
Yeah, so this is my regular experience of movie going, but the first time it ever happened to me was I stumbled into doing this when I was in college. I was super busy. It was my busiest time in college, and I had no life whatsoever. And I had so little life, I didn't even know what movies were coming out. But one day I say, you know what? I haven't been to a movie theater in months. It feels like I haven't even relaxed in months. I'm going to go see a movie. And I go to the ticket counter. I love to go to movies by myself, so I go to the ticket counter. And I say to the woman working there, I want to see a movie. I don't even know what any of these are. Just give me a ticket for the best movie that's out right now. And she gives me a ticket for The Dark Knight. And all I know about this movie at this point is that it's called The Dark Knight. And I'm picturing like some kind of medieval thing, maybe about what I thought in my brain was going to be. It was going to be about a knight who seems really bad and really evil, but turns out to have a heart of gold or something like that. And so I'm sitting in the movie, and all of a sudden, I'm in the middle of this bank heist. Something I wasn't expecting, but I love heist films. And instantly, if you've seen The Dark Knight, which I hope all of you have, it starts off with adrenaline. Instantly, my heart's pounding. I'm excited to see more and more banks get robbed. I'm like, this is great. This is wonderful. This is amazing. And then, spoiler alert, the main criminal rips off his mask, and it is the Joker one of my favorite movie villains who I had no idea that I was going to see that day. And all of a sudden, I'm in the Batman universe with my heart pounding, suddenly wondering, how the heck did I even get there?
That's pretty cool. So then you watch the rest of the movie, and was it just an amazing experience? Once you realized it was a Batman movie, was it still as incredible?
Yeah, The Dark Knight is my favorite movie of all time, I think. I've never seen movies multiple times in theaters, but The Dark Knight I've seen 7 times in theaters.
Oh, wow.
And I have no idea how much it's my favorite movie because it's actually a fantastic movie, and how much it is of that was my first time ever having this just magical, mystical experience. And now I just associate that with that movie, and my mind was so blown away that it'll probably forever be my favorite movie.
So from that moment on, this seems like kind of a serendipity moment where you accidentally came into the experience. Have you pretty much been faithful to not seeing trailers and posters, or how did you step away from seeing the advertising for movies?
So what my philosophy now is that the posters and the trailers, those are there to help you decide whether or not you're going to see a movie. And so I'll watch them. If I'm like, hey, I've never heard of this movie, do I want to spend $20, or do I want to spend 2 hours of my time going to see it? I'll watch them up until that point. But then as soon as I decide that I'm going to see a movie, I learn nothing about it. So an example is last year, Star Wars The Force Awakens came out, and of course I know I'm going to go see the first Star Wars movie in forever. Of course I know that I'm going to go see it. So I made sure that I didn't see a single poster, a single trailer, nothing about it, so that when I sat down in that theater, I could have this pure, unadulterated experience. And luckily it wasn't as horrible of an experience as Phantom Menace.
Yeah, that one of my favorite Phantom Menace quotes is in the movie Fanboy, when they get so excited about the Phantom Menace and then they sit down and the last thing they say before the credits roll is, "What if this movie sucks?" I just love that part.
The Phantom Menace, it came out as a junior high, and I was so excited to see it. And even in junior high, I realized it was a bad movie. But I'd been so excited to see it, and I had to double down on my excitement of it. I couldn't say, "Oh, that movie sucked," after talking about how awesome it was going to be for months. So I actually saw Phantom Menace. It was another one that broke my rules. I saw it 6 times in theaters, disliking it every single time, but too prideful to say, "This movie sucks."
Yeah, I can understand that. I think that was most of our generation with that movie. But so with Star Wars, the audience, this might not sound like a hard thing to do, but Star Wars was plastered everywhere. Like you couldn't go to any store without having some sort of Star Wars merchandise. So how did you manage to not see anything about Star Wars?
Oh, it just takes discipline. I mean, it's got a distinctive font. So if you see that font, you just turn your head and look away. I don't watch any movie trailers right now. If I go to the theater, I come in after the trailers are played, and it's hard, but it's so worth it.
How do you know? So is there a time that you know if I come in 10 minutes later than the start, that the pre-show is going to be over, or how do you gauge when the trailers are not going to be on?
Well, I just come in like 20 minutes after the start time's supposed to be, and I've usually got a friend who'll text me when the trailer's over. We're one of those people. And I mean, I don't have to do that with every movie. I just have to do that with movies where I know that the Rogue One – so right now Rogue One's coming out, and I just do that if I know the Rogue One trailer is going to be played.
Yeah, you can – my wife, Alicia, you can ask her if we've been in a couple movies in the last couple weeks together. And when Rogue One comes on, if the pre-show, I'll usually just plug my ears and start humming really loud so I don't see it. Or if the trailer comes on while we're – and I can just see, because you can just sense when it's a Star Wars trailer. Like if you've watched Star Wars movies and you're a fan, you just know in your heart when it's a Star Wars trailer. I've literally like run over people to get out of the theater so I not to watch the trailer. But it kind of adds to the experience because it adds to the anticipation of it. It adds to the whole – I don't know, kind of mystique of whether it's going to be a good movie. And part of me knows that Rogue One's probably going to be terrible, but I'm still going to go and see it, and it might be great just because I didn't do that.
Well, and I have no idea. Here's literally what I know about Rogue One. I know it's a Star Wars movie. I know it's named Rogue One. And from the Star Wars universe, I assume it has to do with Rebel pilots flying spacecraft, but I don't even know that. I'm just assuming that. That's literally all I know. And I can bet that I will be blown away, no matter what the critical response of it is. I can bet that I'll be blown away when I sit in that theater, just because I have no idea where I'm going.
I just want to talk about, so speaking of Rogue One, sort of like a an advertising trap that happened to me. I was watching a commercial for a car, but it was a Nissan Rogue. And so, of course, this Nissan Rogue, the whole commercial is essentially a Rogue One commercial. And I was like, are you kidding me? And I just couldn't even, I was in a theater and I was looking up and this was happening. And like, I walked out already once in the, up until this point. I couldn't walk out again. So I just closed my eyes and started humming, knowing there was probably nothing storyline wise, but it's crazy how some of these movies hype up. And then you get a movie like, 10 Cloverfield Lane was actually another one that I knew nothing about. Because the trailer tells you nothing. You just kind of know it's a Cloverfield movie, and it is only kind of by accident. And my wife and I went and saw it, and blew me away. One of my favorite movies of last year, and knew nothing about it.
Well, a great example of that is even the trailer itself. What movie was it first premiered with? What was the trailer? It was the...
I forget, but that was the only trailer. It wasn't even online or anything. It was just in this film in the beginning.
It was Deadpool.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I remember being in the Deadpool theater, and usually you know what trailers are going to come up in movies. You know what movies are coming. You're expecting them. And I remember this trailer starts playing. It's John Goodman in this bomb shelter, and it's like, what the heck is going on? And all of a sudden at the end, you realize it's a Cloverfield movie, and even just that trailer blew me away just because I wasn't expecting it, and I didn't know it was coming. I was so pleasantly surprised just by that trailer itself.
And the trailer doesn't ruin too much of it at all. It's a pretty classy trailer. Again, that's a J.J. Abrams. He produced it. He didn't direct it by any means. It was a first-time director. But that's what I like. And some trailers, can you think of off the top of your head, I didn't ask you this before, but can you think of off the top of your head any trailers that have completely ruined movies?
Oh, any comedy trailer? Yeah. Can you name a comedy movie that hasn't been ruined by the trailers?
No, it's very true. Because, I mean, I would assume all the major jokes would be in the trailer.
Yeah, a game I want to play is there's this new Kevin James movie on Netflix where I watched the trailer of it. Because I'm never going to watch it anyways. But what I'm really curious about is I want to write a plot synopsis of it just based on the trailer.
I see how accurate it is.
Yeah, and I will bet you $20 that you couldn't tell the difference between my plot synopsis and an actual one from somebody who watched the movie.
I almost guarantee that because trailers for comedies are really, really bad. Most animated trailers. Which trailers then would you say, like genre, you might not be able to tell what it's about?
I don't know, Nick. I literally don't watch trailers.
When was the last time that you consistently watched? What was the last trailer you watched?
The one for that Kevin James one. I only watch trailers once I've decided that I'm not going to watch this movie.
Oh, okay. We just don't care enough.
Yeah. But it's interesting. It's actually really hard to do, and I actually think that's part of the experience where, for me, it's almost become this game of I'm going to avoid this Hollywood advertising. I'm going to avoid these Hollywood things that destroy this experience for me. It's funny. It's actually part of the experience for me. It's almost like this game I play against those Hollywood guys. Where it's like, ha, suckers, I'm not buying into it. I'm not seeing your marketing. Sometimes I fail. Sometimes I do it successfully. But that's part of the experience. It's just this game of how do I avoid this?
If you've ever, like, accidentally seen a poster or a trailer or whatever, do you still go and see the movie?
I'm probably less likely to see a movie the more advertising I see about it. How I decide to see a movie is I hear people say, oh, this movie was incredible.
Okay, so word of mouth, which is really cool. And most people are good at not spoiling a movie kind of thing. I don't know, guys. This might sound like a really lame thing. I challenge everyone to try this once. Go to the movie theater, and if you're really bold, do what Dylan did. Go here to the Cineplex in Grand Prairie. And just ask someone up front, just say, hey, give me a movie. And get them to print you off a ticket to a good movie and go and see it. Especially if you know nothing about it. And I guarantee it'll be an interesting experience.
Another way you could try this is the problem is it only blows you away if it's actually a good movie.
That's true. I mean, yeah.
So another good way to try this is there's millions, well, not millions, there's hundreds of classic movies that are well-regarded, and just look up a list online of the top 100 movies of all time, or ask a friend that whose taste you trust, what are your top 10 favorite movies, and there's a good chance that there'll be one movie on that list that you know nothing about, and don't ask anything about it, just go find it and watch it at home.
For example, if you haven't seen Swiss Army Man, which most of you probably haven't seen that movie, go and watch it. I will tell you nothing about it.
Well, or this is, it's not necessarily the most age-appropriate movie, that's all I'll say about it, but The Big Lebowski. I knew nothing about. except for that it was a cult classic. It was well regarded. And last year, after a medical procedure, when I was laid up on the couch, I'm like, hey, I should watch this classic. I sat down, I watched it, I had my mind, well, actually, the first time I was just so confused. I was like, oh, is this a classic? But I was so confused in an incredible way. Ended up watching it two or three more times, and now it's one of my favorite movies, too.
This also happened to me with The Goodfellas, which I won't tell you anything about, but it is not about what I thought it was going to be about. Really, really good movie, but I thought it was a comedy. Started watching it. It's not, so I'll tell you that much, but it is a good one. So go see
that. When they discover that it's a heartwarming tale about a racing horse who thought they were out for retirement, they're going to be so
And his name
surprised.
Was Goodfella. That was the name of the horse.
You're going to be so surprised.
So go watch that racing movie. It's really good.
Warning, though, Seabiscuit is a well-regarded movie, but it is gory beyond all comparison. So if you're going to watch Seabiscuit, make sure that you're not watching with kids in the room.
Yeah, especially if you're afraid of water and just pirates in general. It's just not a – it's a really realistic Somalian pirate movie, actually.
Oh, Nick, you spoiled it.
Oh, crap. See, sorry, guys. I'm really new to this. But
Tom Hanks has a really great family-friendly movie that came out last year that was all about a whimsical journey through the Atlantic. And if you just want a good escape – that's an easy fantasy watch. Check out that Tom Hanks movie.
Well, faithful to Boldly Go audience, we're going to move on to our next segment where we talk about one of the most beautiful things in the world, and that is Star Trek The Next Generation.
Truly an experience.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen it, you should, and we're going to be your gurus into your Picard experience. And today, Dylan is going to kind of do a commentary and a discussion on one of my favorite episodes, and I think one of his as well.
Yeah, this is Season 1, Episode 14, 11001001.
Can you say that again?
11001001, Season 1, Episode 14. I've just spent the last 5 minutes memorizing that. Anyways, this episode has got the weird name because it centers around this race of aliens called the Bynars, who they've integrated their bodies and their minds and their whole society with the central computer on their planet that regulates everything. And all of a sudden, this computer, it's having problems, and so they hijack the Starship Enterprise to take it to their home world to use the Enterprise's powerful computer to help fix their home world computer and save their whole race and their whole civilization. Now, how they do that is the Starship Enterprise is in dry dock getting repairs, and most of the crew is on leave while the Bynars come onto the ship to do work on it. And the only crew left are Captain Picard and Commander Riker. And on the Enterprise, there's this thing called the holodeck, which is this basically really complex, incredible virtual reality room that you can go into. And William Riker, the second officer of the ship, he loves New Orleans 19th century jazz. And so they create this bar where he could go and play music. And within this bar, the Bynars have created the simulation of this woman named Minuet, who's just this beautiful but also intelligent, witty, super realistic computer simulation. And pretty soon, Riker is completely captivated by her. He's totally, completely in love with this computer simulation. And then eventually, he shares her with Captain Jean-Luc Picard just because he's intrigued by what the holodeck could do. And Picard gets fascinated, not with her from a love perspective, but just with, holy smokes, I cannot believe how realistic this woman is, how good this computer simulation is perspective. And while they're fascinated, the Bynars hijack the Enterprise to take it to their home planet.
That's a really good description of that. One of my favorite parts of this, which has nothing to do with the storyline, is seeing William Riker play the trombone. And he does this, like, he kind of pulls this out. And it's not the first time or the only time that a crew member surprises me with their music. Data plays the violin and pretty much anything he wants to because he's an android. Picard, maybe we'll talk about this episode later, he plays the flute at one point. But just watching William Riker play
he's
the trombone.
He's also a great Shakespeare actor.
Yeah.
So the captain is a Shakespearean actor, and I just learned last week that he was in love with Shakespeare, he got a gig on Star Trek, and he just wanted to make some money, so he agreed to do it, because he thought Star Trek could only last one season.
Really?
And then he could go back to Shakespearean acting, and Patrick Stewart said that if he thought it would have lasted more than half a season, there's no way he would have taken the job.
That's actually really funny. So what I like about this is, another thing about William Riker, is this is the first time
but not the only time that William Riker is going to fall in love with people that maybe he shouldn't fall in love with. And he knows that minuet isn't real. Like, you never once questioned that. But what I like about what this episode is asking is, what is love and when is it real?
And that's something that Riker asks himself. He says, I'm falling in love with her, but I know she's just a computer simulation. But she's got intelligence. She's got backstory. She's real in so many ways. So is this forbidden love or is this okay love? And that's what he's trying to figure out. And it's interesting. I love the show because this will be a recurring theme throughout, especially with Riker, falling in love with these people, whether there's gender issues, whether there's alien species issues, whether there's they're from another nation that the Federation shouldn't like. There's always this issue of, does love transcend other boundaries?
Yeah, and truly, is love enough? Is love enough to sustain a relationship? And in this case, he pretty much realizes that it's not. It's not enough to sustain the relationship because she only exists in this particular reality of the holodeck.
But I think then the question that Picard's asking the whole time is, what makes somebody human? Is there something like a soul that she doesn't have, or is she fully human because she's got that intelligence, she's got that backstory, she's got all of that? The episode really asking what's human.
And she has independence too, right? Like she can make her own decisions. She becomes sentient in a lot of ways.
Well, I think that in this episode, you also have these Bynars who are these natural intelligence life forms. But they're also so enmeshed with computers that they're completely dependent on them. So are they humans?
Yeah, because is humanity based on a series of just organic material in enough of a pattern that it becomes a human body? Or is Data human? Like, does Data, at some point, Data, even Picard will say, like, you are more human than any of us. So what is humanity?
Well, and I think the other question asked here is justice and what's appropriate, what's not. So these Bynars, they steal this military warship, but they steal for a good reason, save their civilization. And I think that's the other moral question that gets asked in this episode of, it's kind of that age-old question of, is it okay to steal a loaf of bread to feed your family? Is it okay to create a small crime in order to do a greater good?
And that's, I don't know, what I like about Star Trek is they often don't try and answer it for you. They don't try and, like, give you just a black and white answer. You kind of walk away maybe with mixed emotions, especially when it comes to the Bynars, because, yeah, they do absolutely steal a ship, but it is for the greater good. And so is the end result. But what if they accidentally blew up the ship, right? So if they messed up the Enterprise and they killed the crew, would that be wrong? But then if they succeed, is that what makes it right? Is the result of your action what makes it good, or is the intent of your action what makes it good?
Yeah, that's a good question, and that's why I love science fiction, because there's something about taking normal humans outside the context of our normal 20th century North America and putting them into a distance of space and time that lets us put them outside of our frame of reference and create those fantastical stories that are really entertaining, but also can raise these really big, big, big philosophical questions. That's why I love science fiction, and that's why I love Star Trek, because it does get you thinking, even as it entertains you.
And it's so strange to me watching Star Trek in 2016, almost 2017, and some of the relevance of the questions that they're asking. Later, there's an episode where, just speaking of Riker falling in love, he falls in love with, I was going to say a lady, but she's played by a female actor, but the alien race itself does not have a gender. And it's interesting, he falls in love with this genderless woman, again, played by a female actor. And it's just so wonderful watching just him try and just work through this, because he clearly loves her. This person clearly loves him, and yet there's no gender there. So it's very interesting.
Well, and that seems like a pretty standard question or storyline now, but you got to remember this is the early 90s when nobody was asking those questions. And coming back to this episode we're talking about today, we're going to get to that point of virtual simulation where it's so realistic that people are asking what's appropriate, what's not. We've even got right now HBO series Westworld, where you got these simulations of people that are very realistic. That's the whole question of one of the biggest TV shows right now is, what's it mean to be human? Are these people real or not? And here's Star Trek asking this almost 30 years ago now.
And I think where we struggle at this is, if humans are responsible for the creation, does that mean that the creation itself is any less equal than the human that created it?
Yeah, these are big questions that I think you, the audience, should experience yourself. So we've talked enough about Star Trek. Now go and watch it. It is on Netflix, just so you know.
And apparently you can download Netflix episodes as of a couple of days ago, so you really have no excuse. Even if you're like, you have crappy internet, go to the library, download all of Star Trek, and just, it's cold outside, it's minus 100, just watch Star Trek all weekend.
And you're still listening to this podcast, and I need to ask you, what are you doing with your life? Why aren't you watching Star Trek right now?
Yeah, don't even listen to us. Turn Star Trek on right now.
You're still listening. Go. Anyways, if you're still here, we do have some special thanks. I want to thank Will Wheaton. Right now, it's minus 40 out as a record, and I want to thank Will Wheaton for showing us how to wear sweaters with style.